Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You can't fully understand the moment we're living in without knowing where we've been. On every episode of NPR's Throughline, we take a story from the news and go back in time to where it started, where it really started. To answer one important question, how did we get here? Find NPR's Throughline on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Ring, 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 ring. May I please speak with Zoe?
Oh, hello, Lamorne. Let's patch in Hannah.
God, I forgot what it was like working with you guys.
Welcome to our show.
Everyone, and welcome to our show, which is called Welcome to Our Show. Now, today we're interviewing writer, director, showrunner, lover, father, amazing surfer. Sometimes I feel like he's high, but I don't think he actually is. He's just always cool and calm. He's responsible for some of your favorite New Girl episodes, Bad in Bed, The Landlord, Secrets, Models, A Father's Love. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Josh Malmuth.
Yay.
Josh, how you doing, man?
Hey,
I'm
Josh.
Good. I'm good. How are you guys, Zoe?
Good. Great. Welcome to our show.
Welcome to our show.
Welcome to our show.
Which is
Thank
called
you.
Welcome to Our Show.
We made it easy for everyone.
We just say that over and over again. We're so happy to see you and hear you.
Yeah. Before we get started, I do have a question. We were talking about something beforehand, and this is completely off topic. If you could, would you nurse a cat? Would you?
No.
Okay. Well, if it were,
even if it had really long teeth.
I mean, maybe if it were like a kind of like a Grapes of Wrath situation, and it seemed like that was the seemed like that was the only, you know, that was like a Dave Finkel story.
You guys
know that story, right?
No.
For those who aren't familiar, Dave Finkel, one of our show creators, writers, producers.
No,
one of our executive producers, yeah. Showrunners,
I think
yeah.
He was sleeping somewhere and a cat tried to suckle off him.
Whoa. Well, did he allow it?
I think he stopped it. I don't know how quickly he stopped it, but I'm positive that he stopped
this
it.
This will now come up in the Finkel interview. We will lead with this story.
We're going to have a chat about this.
Because that's a situation that one could start by being very philanthropic for the cat, but then at the same time could then become illegal if you let it go on for too long.
Okay. I think also, like, guys, he didn't have cat milk in those nipples. It's
I know. That's what I mean. That's why it gets illegal. It's like, what you doing,
man? Yeah, I remember him saying the tongue felt very rough, and we all kind of like cut him off at that point.
No more details needed.
No more details.
Okay, well, we're going to bring that one up. Hi, Josh. So, Josh.
Hi, guys.
One of our awesome writers there from day one to day 1,000,001 and wrote so many fantastic and funny episodes, and we're just so excited to have him.
Yeah, I'm so excited to talk to you guys. It's been a minute.
So Josh, let's start at the beginning. How did you start your New Girl journey? When did you first, you know, hear of the show, and how'd you get involved with it?
And is this the Dave King story?
That's sort of the chapter two. I mean, the first thing was I actually read about it on a little website called Deadline Hollywood.
Oh, heard of it.
When the pilot was announced, all our favorite website.
Yes.
big website, guys. Big website. Daily. In the industry, you know.
And I saw that. It sounded like a really cool project. I had just watched Jake Kasdan's movie, and I was a fan of Zoe and Liz, and I was like, wow, that sounds awesome. And I've never done this before. I was thinking about this morning before we started recording. I've never emailed my agent to be like, I really want to be on this thing. Mm-hmm. And I had just come off my first job, a show that got canceled. My agent and said, I think I could be good on this show. And he was kind of like, yeah, whatever. Everybody wants to be on this show. It's like the biggest new show. Yeah. Right. But yeah, fortunately I was able to get a meeting, and I met with Liz and Brett and Dave, and I saw the pilot. And sometimes when you go and watch a pilot before a staffing meeting, it's like this horribly awkward thing, because you see like a really terrible pilot, and then you have to go meet with the creators and be like, this is great, I really want to work on this show. But in this case, the pilot was amazing, and I was like wow. And then I got really nervous, because I'm like, well, I really want this job. So then, you know, they declined to offer me a position on the show until Dave King passed on a job, and then I was hired.
Wait, who's Dave King?
He's a great writer.
He passed on New Girl.
That is what I was told by my reps. Liz and Brett and Dave will never cop to it, but
right,
yeah. I think he took a job on Parks, so that worked out for Dave King.
Everybody wins.
That's a good.
Everybody job. Won. Yeah. Everybody won.
Yeah.
Well, was that a successful show? Was it?
It's interesting, right? Because their staffing meeting happens before the show is picked up.
Right? In some cases that's in this case it was. I think I met with them like a week before the show got picked up, but it was pretty clear that the show was going to get picked up at that
on
point.
This
I
show.
Think everybody, yeah,
right.
I think everybody.
I remember meeting you, Josh. I mean, I guess I like probably met like all the writers when I first came in. Like I came into the writer's room just to say hi, bring some treats, whatever, you know, mm-hmm. as one mm-hmm. does. And but I remember spending time with you first on. We had a promo we had to do, and I think it was just me. And they had written all the stuff, but they didn't talk to the New Girl writers. And the stuff was, it was like the marketing department or the, like somebody had written it. And it was like not quite tonally on brand for New Girl. So they brought you in, and you were just so quickly rewriting everything to make it, like, right for Jess. And I was like, who is this wonderkind? Like, you were so young and so like talented and smart.
It's funny that you remember it that way, because I remember being so nervous that I was like sweating through my clothes. I mean, I had never really been on a set before.
Well, they like sent you. You were the one they sent to set for that.
Yeah, we Zoe and I rewrote it on the fly, and it was this weird thing because it wasn't our crew really either. You know, it was
different.
Was kind of the promo department.
We
wrote it on the fly, and I remember just being like it. After I left, it was the biggest adrenaline rush because I never really, and these were just promos, but I never been on it. I mean, because the show I worked on before was a multicam that got shot, you know, as a block and shoot. So it wasn't really like a lot of set time. So that was my first time being on a professional set, and it was really intense.
Well, you did such a great job. And I will say our marketing department was like absolutely amazing at Fox. And we had Joe Early in charge. He was just such a so great. And, but you know, sometimes like it was a brand new show and they had like all this stuff written and it just wasn't quite, we were like, that's not quite what we're doing. And of course it was so wonderful to have you there representing and rewriting all the stuff with me.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing about a new show, and not just for the marketing department, for the writer's room too. You know, you have a pilot, but you don't really know what it is yet, you know? And
No, exactly. I think we've watched, 9 episodes now? And I think it took me till episode 6 or 7, I think, in my opinion, to, like, figure out my performance. I think I, like, kind of had it on the pilot. And then
season 3, I was like, I get it. Oh, I see. Oh, I see what you guys are trying to do with this show. Let's rock out.
Let's rock out with some bird shirts.
From a writer's perspective, Josh, because you were there from the beginning all the way to the end, how was that process for you, figuring out the characters, the show, where they were going? And
yeah, I mean, I think that like there's definitely some, I mean, first of all, you know, there was a lot of vision from Liz. You know, she had a very clear sense of sort of what she wanted the feel of the show to be, because it was very personal for her. And then I think as we got into series, there was just a lot of guess and check, you know, and like we try something and maybe it works, maybe it doesn't. I think like, you know, Berkeley Johnson pitched the thing about Winston not being able to do pranks, like it's too small or it's too big. And that really like helped unlock that character for us. Mm-hmm. You know, we sort of, and also, I mean, it really is about spending time with you guys too. You know, I mean, getting to know you guys and letting sort of what's funny about you kind of come out through the character in a natural way. And like, and you know, that's just a process, you know, it just takes time. And I think sometimes you find it really fast, and other times it takes a minute. But, and also, you know, characters change and the relationships change between the characters. I mean, it's all, you're definitely on kind of a ride. Like in a way you're kind of watching it with the audience, you know, and experiencing it in the same way.
Yeah. And you guys, you know, walk us through that process of being in the room. Now, for us as actors, you know, there are a few of us. So we come to work and we banter off of each other. We hang out. We have fun. You know, we go home. We text. We kick it. We this little group. In the writer's room, there are a lot more of you. Tell us about that process, about partnering off with different writers, how you come up with a story.
Yeah.
You know, do you rather be by yourself doing it? Do you rather be with the group doing it?
You know, it was a uniquely close group. You know, I mean, I'm still close with a lot of the writers. I think, you know, Liz, Brett, and Dave did a really good job of hiring people who, they kind of wanted to hire a young staff because they wanted people who were at the same life phase as the characters in the show, you know? And they wanted people to be bringing stories from their life into the writer's room. But yeah, I mean, we hung out all the time. I mean, we would work until 9 or 10 and then we'd go out to dinner together, you know, and we'd do that a few times a week. I mean, I was 26, 27, and it was like, I don't know, like a summer camp / grad school feeling for me, you know, like this incredible, you know, closeness and camaraderie with these people, but also you're producing this wonderful thing now. So
with everything you have on your plate, earning your degree online seems impossible. But at Grand Canyon University, we specialize in helping you fit a master's degree in education into your busy day. Your graduation team, led by your own GCU counselor, provides you with the personal support you need to succeed. Achieve your goals with a plan and team behind you. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Visit gcu.edu.
Started talking about this incident, drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now? Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You can't fully understand the moment we're living in without knowing where we've been. On every episode of NPR's Throughline, we take a story from the news and go back in time to where it started, where it really started. To answer one important question, how did we get here? Find NPR's Throughline on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
Western nations like the U.S. and Europe.
Mexico will likely have its first female president.
And then you have China.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters.
He'll get his yo-yos to Europe in time. But the longer this drags on, the more worry he's getting.
They knew that they needed to do this as fast as they possibly could to get a drug on the market as fast as they could.
I'm David Gura.
I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen. We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
Basically, everyone was expecting, if not a calamity, certainly a recession.
But the problem is that that paperwork, as our reporting showed, is fake.
As someone who's covering the market, I'm often very worried about an imminent collapse. I'm thinking about it quite often.
Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello. From Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. This month, we're bringing you the stories of disappearing acts. There's the 17th century fraudster who convinced men she was a German princess, the 1950s folk singer who literally drove off into the sunset and was never heard from again, the First Nations activist whose kidnapping and murder ignited decades of discourse about Indigenous women's disappearances, and the young daughter of a Russian czar whose legendary escape led to even more intrigue and speculation. These stories make us consider what it means to disappear and why a woman might even want to make herself scarce. Listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to our show.
I gotta say, every time you were on set, and for folks out there in listener town, when you're shooting a show, writers are on set, especially the ones who wrote that particular episode, to kind of, I guess, guide the ship. You know what I mean? We have like a different director every week sometimes, and it ends up becoming that the writers are more like the directors. And whenever you are on set, I gotta say that, because things happen on set sometimes too, you know, disagreements or whether it may be something goes wrong with a prop or whatever the case may be. And, you know, people can get a little chaotic sometimes on sets. Sets can be very stressful. You are always very, very chilled out. And that's the one thing I do remember about you is it never felt like there was an issue. There could have been issues that I would have never known if I looked at your face. Is that where you
That's because he had a jazz theme. That's because he had a jazz theme bar mitzvah.
Yeah, yeah. Is that why?
You is that why? That all started with jazz theme?
Yeah.
The jazz, the surfing.
Yeah, it's a lot of jazz. I was
listen
very drunk.
To a little John Coltrane. You're like, oh, man.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I just, you know, it's a single set.
It's surfing. It's surfing,
it's,
right?
The surfing could have played a role for sure, too. I think that it was just, it's a single cam set, you know, like there's no audience there. You know, we have time to just take a breath and, find it and figure out kind of what we want to do. And yeah, it's funny you mentioned the like prop. One of the experiences I had of being on set was that a prop person would come over and had several great ones throughout the years. And they would show me two props and like, do you want Zoe like holding this thing or this thing? And I would pick one and they'd look at me like, wrong choice.
This was a test.
Oh my God. You're not cut out for this job.
No matter what.
We had the best props department. They were so incredible, I have to say. Like case in point, that I think it was like one of the first episodes where I had a talking stick and then they made the tiny talking stick. And I was I can't even believe how amazing.
Yeah.
So Josh, I have to tell you, it was like early, maybe not early on. It was actually several seasons in, and I was talking to Liz and I was like, well, you know, she was like, yeah, you know, every writer, you know, is, you know, good at different things. So it's kind of like figuring out who writes, you know, who best and everything. And then I was like, so who writes Jess best? And I was going to guess it was going to be like one of the female writers. And she's like, Josh Malmuth. Josh Malmuth is the best Jess writer. So I want to know, how did you connect with the character of Jess so well that you became the master of writing Jess?
For those out there, this is Jess. Josh Malmuth is Jessica Jess. Day.
Yeah, I don't know. Gosh, that's a very kind thing of Liz to say, and I'm sure she's very upset that I know that now. but yeah, I don't know. Like, I think that... Yeah, I'm not sure. I think that any writer, like especially any comedy writer, probably on some level feels like they were, you know, an outsider of some kind growing up, you know, and that's why we sort of turn to comedy, you know, as a way to like not, you know, like have people hang out with us and not, you know, want to exclude us from things. And so, yeah, I think that I always tried to look at Jess from that perspective, almost like a scientist trying to figure out like these guys and what, you know, you know, what made them tick and how to sort of survive in their ecosystem. I don't know though. I think it's just, the thing about writing a sitcom is like, you know, every character exists in relation to the other characters, you know, and it's those dynamics and those relationships that are really important, you know? So
yeah,
it also might've been that I just really enjoyed, you know, writing Jess and how she interacted with Cece and, you know, Winston. And I think I always really, I loved, it was always when I sat down to write like a scene with two people, especially, that I was like, oh, this is really fun. Like now I really get to get into what this what their dynamic is.
The two person scenes were always my favorite ones to play too. Cause when we had like a million people in the room, it was always just it's chaotic.
You can, the way you shoot it, you can cross shoot it. You can improvise.
Yeah.
The style, I feel like the style of New Girl. And one of the reasons it was so good was like, Liz wasn't afraid to go there with two characters, like let them really start to get into it and not just like, you know, yelling at each other, insulting each other, but like digging out what's weird about each other, you know, and really like picking at it in a way that always made for really surprising, interesting scenes. yeah, I was, somebody linked me to the models episode. And there were two great scenes, you know, one with you and Hannah, where you guys really get into it with the models. And then you're up on the, I did want to ask you, because I've never asked you about being on that spinning platform. You're so funny on it.
So the dangerous, I was on it, and then there were some dangerous parts where Monica, my stunt double, I have to give credit to her. That's She's absolutely awesome. And I've worked with her for a long time, and she is such a great study of character. Like, she's like, you know, she's very special. So she helped me out in the parts where it was going to be unsafe for me to be up there. But oh my God, it was one of the most fun things ever to play that scene. Like, the physical comedy of that scene was so much fun. I loved doing that. And the fact that we had we actually had a car sponsor. Like, didn't we have because they were like, Ford, further, go further. I remember further, go further.
Yeah, we had to slip a commercial into it.
Yeah.
I think we've done that a couple times.
That was our first one, though, right?
It was our first one. And I think a couple people were confused at the time, but I was like, no, this is fantastic. We actually are, it's like a car show, like within a car show. But another episode, we just watched Bad in Bed, which is so good. Like, oh my God, that was such a fun episode. Oh, that was your first one, right?
That's the one you submitted for the Emmys?
Oh no, it wasn't that one. It was actually, I made a mistake. It was actually Models. I knew it was a Josh Malmuth episode that I submitted for Emmys, but it was Models that I submitted because somebody was like, oh, it's nice to have an episode with a lot of physical comedy in addition to like the, you know.
Yeah. Bad in Bed was, that was a really, I mean, that was the crazy experience of shooting that was when you and Justin were doing those scenes, Zoe, I was like, are we going to be able to air this? Like, this is the craziest thing I've ever seen. And it was so funny and weird. And it really, like, you embraced it with a gusto that I really respect.
The voices, the character voices. Josh, you ever make weird voices? When you're doing your thing.
That based on truth?
That ever happened to you? Someone ever make voices?
I wish I could take credit for that, but that's all Liz. It's all Liz. The Jimmy Stewart voice stuff.
So what did you? Because that was your first ever episode you wrote. So I'm sure that felt like a lot of pressure to perform and produce a great episode, season one of a show, 9 episodes in. So what were you given?
Yeah.
And then you walk away, and then what did you bring back that then landed in the show?
You know, I'm trying to remember what that process was like. I mean, I think it was actually pretty typical in that we came up with the story in the room, you know, in the writer's room, and we spent a few weeks breaking it out. And I feel like for that episode, we really had a clear sense of what we wanted to do, right? Like, Paul Genslinger, I believe, was Justin Long's character's name.
Yes. Justin Long's still in my phone as Paul Genslinger.
Is he really?
By the way. Yes. Or no, I might have just changed it back to Justin Long because I was like, this is ridiculous.
It's been a decade of Genslinger.
I wonder how often he gets Genslinger, people yelling Genslinger. Maybe more now.
We'll find out. Yeah. Yeah. After the pandemic, when so many people were like binge watching the show.
Yeah. We knew we wanted, you know, her to, you know, kind of take the next step with Paul. So we had a clear sense of what we wanted to do in that episode. And then we came up with a story. And I think I wrote, you know, there's all these steps, you know, we write a story area, which is sort of a condensed outline, which we send to the network. And then we get notes on that. Then we write an outline and we get notes on that. And throughout that process, we're getting notes from a lot of people and we're making revisions. And, you know, at New Girl, the outlines were really long. In some cases, they were like 14 or 15 pages. It's super detailed. I mean, if you guys get a hands on one, it'd be interesting. I think you'd be surprised at how much is in there.
I wouldn't be surprised. I've seen some of those alt packages.
Yeah, we would get alt packages that were like 200 pages long.
So I'm sure about
that. Yeah, and who do you think was generating all that material? I mean, we'd sit in rooms and just pitch jokes for hours and hours and hours.
And joke factory.
And, you know, I mean, it was a great training, you know, I mean, besides just, you know, generating good content for the show, it was a great way to learn how to write jokes. But, and then I wrote the draft and, you know, and then we all kind of worked on it together. I don't know, you know, I think that like Liz had the idea. It was funny that I was writing it because she had the very funny idea that Jess buys this extremely complicated piece of lingerie and doesn't really know how to wear it. And I remember asking just a lot of detailed questions about like, well, what are we talking about here? Because I don't have a lot of experience with this. And she's like, it's like a spider web. I'm like, okay, that doesn't help me a lot, but I'll do my best. But yeah,
a Google search or go out in the field to do research?
I may have done some Googling.
Did it change your algorithm in your computer?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Some disturbing stuff that. For a while?
I'm like, don't
Google.
I don't want to mess up my algorithm. I'll just walk down Hollywood Boulevard for a few blocks and we'll see.
Still to this day, I get leather strappy lingerie ads. But yeah, I you know, and the experience of producing the episode was, yeah, I mean, it was surreal, you know? I mean, we were... we shot a lot on location. I remember on that show, we were, you know, with Max, we were out like in the valley.
Don't say the valley like that. You said the way you said the valley and the look.
Do you feel like
face,
it was a hard V?
Yeah, the valley. I live in the valley.
There was a tone.
There's a bird outside.
I didn't hear
of my
the
window.
Tone. I think some people might be sensitive, but I'm not gonna say who.
The valley is a beautiful place. Okay.
I love the valley.
I love the valley. I'd love to live in the valley.
I haven't seen grass in a while, but that is okay.
Okay. Wait, there's grass in the valley, okay? You might not have seen the ocean in a while.
I have not. I have not. But I have a pool.
And you've seen
that
ocean.
That's what you get
it's probably
the
as big as an ocean.
But the water has dried out. Yes. It is very hot in the valley.
When you write an episode and then you bring it to all of us to do a table read in front of the studio and the network before you shoot...
Yeah.
How is your first table read, hearing the cast read your
Do
first
you ever feel
script
like,
with your name on it?
They ruined it.
Yeah. Right. Did we screw it up?
I remember thinking that with a play I wrote in high school, and then the actors who were my friends read it, and I was like, they ruined it.
They'll never
They've
make
hit
it.
Every joke wrong.
They didn't even try.
Rarely. I mean, you guys were so good. And, you know, I mean, My sort of overall philosophy about making TV shows is that it's 99% you guys, you know? I mean, you're the thing. You're what makes it all work. And our job as writers is really just to try to, you know, platform you and put you in a position to do your best work and kind of get out of the way, you know? So I think more often than not, it's not so much like if something didn't land, it wasn't, oh, Lamorne completely messed that up. It was, which may have been the case, but our thinking
never,
not you, Lamorne.
Yes, bring
maybe
heat.
Season one, season two.
But our thinking was more like, what did we not do right to, like, you know, put, you know, what it was a more, it was always more reflective. It was like, what didn't we do right to, like, make that joke work? You know, what can we, you know, fix?
That's sweet.
So, yeah, the weird thing about a table read is that you like, you know, on like everybody tells you, especially when you're a new writer, everyone's like, don't worry. The network knows that we work on all of these. This isn't a reflection on you. And then you're up there and the network's looking at you and you're like, of course this is a reflection on me. Yeah. They're like,
people get fired all the time from table reads.
Yeah. For people who don't know like how a table read works, I'm just going to give a little background. You basically every week on a TV show, most comedies, some dramas don't have them just because it's not as necessary, but to kind of test out your jokes and stuff, you have a table read where all the actors come together with the new brand new script. And, you know, everyone's there, all the writers and the director and the network and the studio. And it's a whole lot of people. And everyone watches it like it's a little play reading. And then the actors leave, go back to set. And then the writers and the director have to go through a bunch of notes.
It's often a cold read, too.
Usually we've never seen the script before. And
They're not really set up for success sometimes.
That can be great, I think. Sometimes for me, if it's written for me, it's sometimes better if it's cold read because it's like it's super fresh. But if it somehow misses the mark, it can be very bad.
Yeah.
I heard a rumor that my character was called No Notes Winston. Is that true? Was that after every time where you guys had no
it's
notes?
It's not true.
That,
I'm going to just say it right now.
First take, Winston.
Yeah, it was that.
And of course, the Winston story where he can't put together a puzzle is perfect.
Yes.
Let's not change anything. Send that straight to the Smithsonian.
We've never read anything better.
There's so few people on the show, though, that were there from day one all the way to the finale. What was the evolution of the show like for you? And I'm sure in the writer's room, you became kind of like the OG.
Well, in fact, I wasn't there till the very end.
111 episodes.
I did. I was there all through season 5. Mm-hmm. And then I you know, parted ways with the show.
Oh.
I don't know why I thought you were there till the end. I remember you there till the end.
Me too. And our brains.
Well, it's because when he left, the show really died.
I mean, we did 7 seasons. So you didn't come back?
I was there for six. Because 7 was kind of a little mini.
Yeah,
I wasn't there for 6 either, which was really sad. I mean, not being there was really hard. I think I just felt like it was time. You know, it was a lot of episodes.
And, sure.
But yeah, I don't know. The evolution of the show, it, you know, somebody told me once, maybe Dave Hemmingson or another writer said that, you know, you start out doing comedy and, you know, you end up doing soap opera on long running shows, you know? And mm-hmm. I think that, like, you know, there is some truth to that in any sitcom where there's, you know, romantic relationships, those start to take up more and more of the story. But I felt like that was really, you know, really good for us. I felt like that gave the show a lot of momentum. And when we really got, you know, locked into, you know, Nick and Jess and Schmidt and Cece, sorry, Lamorne.
It's okay.
I think the combo of the serialized element and the episodic, like, that is kind of paramount to, you know, the modern day sitcom. I think that combination was a really nice one for this show.
It was. And I felt like we struck a good balance on the show. Like, we still had a lot of space to do really, really silly stuff.
Yeah.
But there, you know, you still kind of had that momentum. Yeah, I was thinking the other day about that episode where, and I completely forgotten about it until I was thinking about the show to do the podcast. The episode where Jess makes out with Schmidt's dad, and
oh my god,
the great Peter Gallagher on the show.
That was so.
She wouldn't stop talking about that for months. She was so
excited. That's untrue. That is untrue. But I was like so excited to work with Peter Gallagher. He is absolutely amazing. But I'm pretty sure I was pregnant. I was pregnant a lot of this show. So I'm pretty sure I was pregnant or had a baby like with me. So last 4 years were like a blur of baby children. For me, but I love Peter Gallagher, and that was a super hilarious episode.
I wanted
a GoPro or something?
Yeah,
I'm wearing a GoPro, and Schmidt's dad tries to kiss me, and I'm like, I have a camera. I don't know what. I don't remember the episode, like, because I have to go back and watch.
A camera on your head.
For the fans out there,
I have no memory of it.
That's a trivia question.
We have to go back and watch. watch it.
We're not going to watch it for that episode.
Like, five seasons.
Schmidt picked something out. I think it was wedding planning.
Oh, he didn't trust you.
And he didn't trust you.
Ah, that's right.
Yeah. So he made you wear a camera on your head.
Oh, that's right. Schmidt didn't trust me. Joelle remembers more than any of us because she's watched the show.
More than any of us.
Well, you end up making out with his dad, then that seems like a good
basis. I didn't end up making out with him. He tries to make out with me. That's
always on him.
He makes a move on me. Yeah.
I see. Right.
As far as
I just remember trying to, like, I love the OC, and I was trying to have like a Sandy Cohen moment with Peter Gallagher. And he's just looking at me like, son, I'm an actor. You understand that I'm not that man.
It's like the time
maybe you could just give me some fatherly advice just for a second.
Just as Peter Gallagher.
It's like the time we had Rob Reiner on the show, and from All in the Family, he used to always get called Meathead. And I don't know why I decided to improvise that and call him Meathead. And when I say, I don't know why he wasn't okay with it. It's not that he wasn't okay with it, because that reaction would have made me feel at least a little bit better if he were just upset about it. He looked at me. He looked at me as if to say, what is this, amateur hour?
Yeah. It's like, he felt sorry for you.
It's like, really? Did you really pull that one out?
It was
like,
pity.
It's like, so it was 40 years ago. You don't think I've heard
done a few
before?
Things since then.
Yeah.
Well, you guys were so good on your feet. I mean, we would throw lines at you guys and you would have to figure out how to turn them into jokes. How did you do that? Like, was that difficult? I mean,
I love it, honestly. Yeah, like, it was really fun. Because there were so many ways that I think that the process of making the show, which it was at times chaotic, but there were so many ways that it kind of kept everything fresh. And like, if you're just seeing lines that are written and only those lines, it's hard to sometimes keep things fresh and funny. And so those, you know, times when you guys would just throw stuff at us, it allowed us to have like this really spontaneous processing and then just a really like quick kind of improvisational energy. Mm-hmm. And then we also had a lot of improvisation on this show. So it was like all that combined made for many ways to get to a fresh, fun result. And so I loved it. I was like, in heaven that we had all these different ways of keeping it really
absolutely
fun.
For me, it was based, especially because our actors on the show are all improvisers. We goof off in between takes. We riff in between takes. We do bits, characters in between takes. So when you throw a joke out there, a lot of times we're trying to see how we could say it in the most obscure way as well. You know, even if you think about the Schmidt character, you throw a joke at him. 99% of the time, he doesn't understand what you're saying. So he's like, so I'm going to do it. I'm going to try it in the Schmidt way, mispronouncing words, things like that, that make it the character unique, but also it makes the process of it's like someone throwing, it's like baseball. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Let's see which pitch you're going to throw and let's see if I can hit it.
Yeah.
And it's just
it tests your instincts. Yeah. It was so fun.
Give people a little background, like in some cases I would be standing next to the camera and, you know, saying, you know, Hannah, now say, you know, what if that guitar was a banana? And you just look at me like, what? We think that could work.
I do remember getting to a point on this show where you kind of had so much trust with the writers and the show was such a success and people are resonating with it, that it's true. You might not understand why someone is pitching you something, but you're also like, let's just get through our day so we can all go home, say the words and just try, like Lamorne saying, to just like catch the ball. And you know what I mean? And make
I know a lot of really like talented filmmakers do that. Like I know David O. Russell does that. He just yells stuff and for people to say. And that they don't necessarily understand. And I think it's like part of a way to keep actors kind of on their toes.
It's that thing, stay in it, just stay in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Stay
yeah.
in it yeah. and make it work.
started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
Western nations like the U.S. and Europe.
Mexico will likely have its first female president.
And then you have China.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters.
He'll get his yo-yos to Europe in time. But the longer this drags on, the more worry he's getting.
They knew that they needed to do this as fast as they possibly could to get a drug on the market as fast as they could.
I'm David Gura.
I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen. We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
Basically, everyone was expecting, if not a calamity, certainly a recession.
But the problem is that that paperwork, as our reporting showed, is fake.
As someone who's covering the market, I'm often very worried about an imminent collapse. So I'm thinking about it quite often.
Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello. From Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. This month, we're bringing you the stories of disappearing acts. There's the 17th century fraudster who convinced men she was a German princess. The 1950s folk singer who literally drove off into the sunset and was never heard from again. The First Nations activist whose kidnapping and murder ignited decades of discourse about Indigenous women's disappearances. And the young daughter of a Russian czar whose legendary escape led to even more intrigue and speculation. These stories make us consider what it means to disappear and why a woman might even want to make herself scarce. Listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And guess what? So are we.
Just in case you forgot, I'm Tori Deal. I'm a 6-time finalist and a Challenge champion.
And I'm Anissa Ferrer, and I've been gracing your screens for the last 2 decades. I am a veteran challenger and Challenge All-Star.
And speaking of All-Stars, All-Stars 4 is finally here.
I'm going to be honest. I literally thought this day was never going to come.
Well, the Challenge gods have answered our prayers, and we're going to be right here along with you fans covering every episode on the podcast.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, redemption seekers, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
Anyone can win, relationships matter, and only one all-star will claim the title of Challenge Champion.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey friends, we want to tell you about another really special podcast we love. Dinner's on Me with Jesse Tyler Ferguson. Dinner's on Me is the show where your favorite celebrities get dinner and get real. Jesse and his famous friends invite you to the table to share untold stories, Hollywood anecdotes, and personal secrets shared only with a full belly of food, wine, and dessert. Jesse is joined by Modern Family co-stars Sofia Vergara and Ed O'Neill, as well as Kathy Griffin, Simu Liu, Mandy Moore, Dax Shepard, and many more. Join us as we step out of the studio and into some of the most acclaimed restaurants around the world with surprise appearances and a spoonful of foodie fun. Your unique access to high-profile cultural luminaries is served here. Take a seat at the table and subscribe to Dinners on Me wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome to to our shed.
Josh, why do you think so many people have resonated with this show? I feel like this show is like network sitcoms, especially single camera ones, don't run for this long.
Yeah.
And there's something that kind of kept it special with so many people, and it's having like a revival. Is that the right word?
Mm-hmm.
Use where people are rediscovering it, and for someone that was on the show for so long, why do you think it connected so well?
Well, it's going to sound corny because I'm talking to you guys, but it's you guys, really. I mean, it's you're all
and
such
you guys.
It's, you're all such wonderful performers, and you had really incredible chemistry. I mean, I. You know, when I'm thinking about what show I want to go work on next or whatever, the first thing I'm looking at is who's in it, you know, because that's really good. That's your engine. That's what people connect with. You know, they connect with the characters and by extension, they're really connecting with the actors. And then, yeah, I'm on top of that. So, yeah, it was just like a murderer's row, you know, batting lineup of great comic actors. And then there are some other things like that aren't even about the writing. I think that the, you know, Jake established a really wonderful way that the show is shot. It feels really good to watch it. You know, the sets are great. You know, the loft is a great set. You know, yeah. It's just such a lived in place that you just want to spend time in. You know, there's all this interesting stuff all over the walls. I mean, I remember walking around the set and just looking around to get story ideas, you know, like those glass grapes or a poster.
I was about to say the blue balls.
Oh my God, you guys.
That's what Damon called the blue balls.
Yeah.
My grandparents had those glass grapes, but like in a different color. And whenever I'd look at those, I'd be like, Grandma, Grandpa. So it was very nostalgic.
You would just kind of think about like, well, what could we do with that? Like that thing that we've been seeing for the last 50 episodes. What if we did a story about that? So I think those are, that was huge. You know, I think, when you think about long-running shows, you know, the Friends apartment or the Cheers bar or the New Girl loft, you know, it's such a, it's just a place you want to spend time, you know? And then, you know, and then I think from a writing perspective, you know, I think everyone can relate to a time in their life where they just felt a little out of control and felt like they were trying to like, you know, get something going, you know, whether that was romantic or professional or whatever. And that their friends were the people that they really relied on during that time. And so I think that's a very, and you know, in a great way, a generation of people experiencing that is minted every year, you know, like that is an experience that people will keep having, you know, our kids will have it in whatever 15 or 20 years and they'll discover the show hopefully, and it'll feel, you know, it'll feel honest to them, you know? So I think that, you know, those
except
are just
the flip phone. The flip phone won't feel honest.
I was saying that I feel like our phone situation has aged pretty well. Like they were mostly iPhones.
Yeah, except Nick Miller. And Nick always has a flip phone because he was supposed to have like an outdated phone.
Right,
but now
it's just
like even the people that would have had flip phones then would still at least have some kind of a non-flip
phone.
Here's
something I discovered though. Because we saw the flip phone in the pilot, right? And we're like, oh, that was a Nick character choice. Makes sense. Except for in episode 109, the 23rd, Winston pulls out a flip phone.
Wow.
It's a Chicago thing.
Wow. Right?
Chi-town.
And then I went, oh, is this
phone.
The one thing that will date our show? But is this flip phone? Because I thought it was a Nick Miller thing. And I thought, that makes sense.
I figured out what it was.
Somebody picked
guys,
the wrong
and they
prop.
Have giant, like the
brick phones. Zoot
yeah.
suits. No, I realize it's because Winston was jobless, so he couldn't afford one of those fancy iPhones.
Put some story on it.
He could not afford
it.
The iPhone.
Right, right,
okay,
right.
So he had a flip phone. It was a
hand-me-down. That episode, the 23rd, I remember seeing a cut of that episode in the writer's room, and that was the first moment, because the show hadn't even aired yet. And that was the first moment where I was like, oh, this is like a serious thing right now. Like this show's really good, you know? And it wasn't anything we had done. It was just that, you know, your guys' chemistry was so amazing. You know, it was just—
The show hadn't aired yet when we shot the Christmas episode?
Is that wrong? That could be wrong.
Maybe one like, episode or two episodes were out. Maybe it's episode 109.
No. Yeah, I feel like it was, it had.
It had because we were shooting the Thanksgiving with the dead body.
The Thanksgiving.
When the show premiered.
Right.
So we were only a couple in.
Yeah, like a couple later.
You know, I do want to ask, there's a little game that Hannah likes to play on the show. And I want to know. On this show, we try to find the bear.
Where's the bear?
The bear.
We heard a rumor.
There's a rumor that there's a bear in every single, or mention of a bear, the word, a picture, or something.
Is that something the writer's room was intentionally
making sure they kind of got in?
There are some things that Liz enjoys. Liz Merriweather, creator, genius behind New Girl. She enjoys.
We're going to talk to her later this season, everybody.
She enjoys mustard. Okay. And these are the I'm not saying these are things. The word. She likes these words. Mustard. Bear. She likes hats. Mentions of hats or actual hats.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
So these are kind of like motifs in the show. I think just because Liz found them to be funny. But yes, there were. And then at one point we actually had, and I still have it around somewhere, a 8-foot cardboard stand-up, like cutout bear that we would, what we would do with it in the writer's office is put it outside someone's closed office door so that when they opened the door, there would be a big bear. There would be a bear staring at them. Oh. And it's surprisingly scary when you get bared.
Especially when you slept in your office all night. And you're just waking up, right?
That's a terrifying time to get bared.
So it's allegedly true. There could be a mention of a bear in every episode or an image.
There's a lot of bear stuff. There's a lot of dog stuff. I was partial to lizard jokes, so you might find some lizard stuff in there. I don't know. We all have our things, you know?
Everybody's got their things.
Yeah.
Right. So you're on New Girl. You have this. You have the best experience of your life, even
really, really?
Even more
not,
than
not joking.
So you go on to be a showrunner yourself.
Mm-hmm.
What was that transition for you like? Was it, did you feel like you were taking a big leap, or did you feel like you were having a natural transition into what comes next?
Oh, it feels like a crazy leap. It feels like a crazy leap because you know, when you're on a staff, you know, when you go home at the end of the day, you're done. You get in your car and you go home, you know? And when you're running a show, you're never done. You just decide to stop working so you can eat and go to sleep. You know, there's always something to do. The amount of work is huge. And there's a lot of responsibilities that as a writer on a show, you just don't have. You know, you have to talk to the network several times a day. You're talking to all the different departments. You're working with the actors. You know, in my day, which I loved, but it would start with me going on stage and talking to the actors, and we talk about the scenes and, you know, the script. But I do think that New Girl prepared me in that I spent a lot of time on set at New Girl. You know, I would sometimes come down with newer writers and just kind of be around if, you know, anything came up. And I think it was, you know, all that time that, you know, it made it easier, the transition, because, you know, that's a big part of your job as a showrunner. That's different from being a writer, is you're working with the, you know, with the crew and with the cast. But nothing really prepares you for running a show. It's you know, an amount of work. It's a staggering amount of work.
Yeah. No, I can imagine.
Will you tell everybody at home what you're working on now? Because everybody wants to tune in.
Yeah. I work on a show called Ghosts that actually just premiered.
Trent O'Donnell.
Yes. One of our amazing directors who then became our directing producer. He is just such an amazing
guy. Oh my God, he's the best. And he's so handsome and he has such a great accent. He's just, it's triple.
He's so easygoing.
Which is very funny because he is a very talented, incredible, handsome man. And then we had an actor called Trent that was on for about a season. And he had Trent Garrett that Jake Johnson said, well, how are we going to tell the difference? And then called actor Trent. Handsome Trent to differentiate the two Trents, and that was.
But
the
they're both handsome.
They're both correct. They're both very handsome.
So and also, can I just also mention Trent O'Donnell has a very talented wife as well.
Extremely. She did one of my favorite shows called The Letdown.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm working on that with Trent. It's weird though, because we shoot the show in Montreal.
Yeah.
Oh wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you have to go up there for?
I haven't gone. So it's actually it's a little sad because I haven't gotten to have that really hands-on experience of, you know.
Why are you shooting in Montreal? Just for like locations or Canadian tax credits?
Yeah, I think it's tax credits. I think it's just, you know, it's
because it's Canada.
I could tell you, you're not missing anything. You're not missing being on set on that show. You're not missing anything. It's two dog shit actors in Utkarsh and Rose. Utkarsh and Butkar and Rose MacGyver are not good people.
I hear they're really nasty too.
I've worked with both of them. They are very nasty people.
Humans.
I don't know what's going on here, but there's some kind of inside joke.
So Rose MacGyver from iZombie, she was also on season one of Woke on my show. Play a couple on that show, and then Utkarsh is like everybody loves Utkarsh. Utkarsh was I do a show with Utkarsh now.
We do Mira Royal Detective.
Mira, that's right, that's right. So I actually love those two. They're two of my favorite people. But I give them a hard time.
All the good people. I said that to Utkarsh when he went to shoot the pilot for Ghost. I'm like, this is like so many new girl people are on Ghosts. I'm like, you're surrounded by the best.
Well, in a way though, it's kind of like New Girl. I mean, it's just a roommate show, you know. I mean, they're ghosts, but it's essentially a roommate show.
So everybody dead.
I'm always pitching the same kind of things that I pitched at New Girl, which is like somebody didn't say goodbye to somebody and they get really upset about it, and by the end of the episode they're both crying about it.
Yeah.
Which to me is like the prototypical New Girl story, you know?
Oh yeah. I think there was even a line that my character had. I think I said good night. I say good night to you every night, Nick. What's the matter? You don't want me to have a good night?
Josh, we'd be like remiss to ask you, because you were on the show for so long and it's like a big relationship, and then it kind of ends, you move on. Do you have any regrets when you look back of things you wish you'd done differently, or there's moments that stand out for you that were particularly challenging that you revisit?
Yes. One I revisit often is it was nobody's fault but my own. I thought it would be funny to do a camping episode where most of the episode is outside at night. I really didn't care for being outside in Franklin Canyon all night for 5 days straight.
Oh, that's funny, because we didn't either.
And I do want to take this opportunity to apologize.
It was a really good episode, though.
It was a good episode.
It was a really good episode. I will say it's funny because I always say to writer friends, I'm like, if you find yourself writing exterior night, just think.
Stop right there.
If it's followed by another exterior night, just think about it.
Yeah.
Like, definitely, like, if I'm getting at this point in my career, if I'm getting a script that's like a movie and I see like exterior night, exterior night, exterior night, I'm like, nope, pass. Sorry. I don't care how good this is. I don't want to work.
Sorry, Christopher Nolan, not doing it.
Because you have to flip everything. You have to be fully nocturnal.
Yeah, we make exceptions for certain people. But I just will say that I once worked on a movie that was 4 months of nights in Miami in the summer. And it was like,
oh, I love that though. Miami. Ooh.
In the middle of the night, it was 95 degrees. And I never slept. I was woken up every morning at the hotel I was staying at by the housekeeping staff who were so mad at me for sleeping in. And I'd be like, I'm so sorry. I'm so tired. Can I just sleep a little bit longer, please? Yeah. So anyway.
That was punishing, though. I mean, it was so cold. And
freezing.
Yeah, I remember that week. And I think like when we wrapped that episode, I just went home and got in bed, and it was like I, you know, it was like I'd been to war or something. Like I just got in bed and like didn't get out for days. It was a really traumatic.
That was the episode.
Because also everybody's kind of a little mad at you too.
Oh, yeah, that was the episode.
Like, oh yeah, you guys looked at me differently for a little while after that.
Yeah. Why?
Our relationship.
Also, why can't we just do this on the stage?
Yeah, I thought Josh was our friend. Yeah, guess he's not. I guess that's not true.
Damn suit. That was the day you realized you were on your way.
You weren't one of us.
Yeah.
It was rare, though, that we got to pick out, like, coats that had to be actually practical and functional.
Yeah, not like a cute Kate Spade coat for me.
That's right. And I remember I picked the wrong coat.
Oh, no.
And you chilly. It was very chilly up there in the Canyon.
Johnson I've never gone back. I remember Jake had to, like wade out into the, like, lake. It's not even a lake. It's just like a pond that just sits there. And he had to, like, dunk his head for a scene. And he was a trooper about it. But I didn't feel bad.
That is shocking.
He always was the one who got sent in the... I mean, well, I did a couple of times, but they usually sent Jake in the water.
The ocean where he was
that ocean
dying.
That, yeah, yeah. That
naked
was a good
in an
episode,
ocean
too, yeah.
in the middle of the night. Wet and dark.
Yeah,
that was a Johnson's
realm. That's my nickname. Wait, what?
Okay.
All right, guys, worst. Every episode, you gotta do something disgusting.
So we don't want to take up too much of your time on your beautiful daughter's birthday, but we want to thank you so much for coming on our show. We hope you'll come back another time.
Yes, indeed.
I would
you know,
love
if you
to.
Like
and
us.
Let's go do some more episodes too, guys. Like, we don't even
let's
have to air
this.
Them. We don't have to air them. Let's just, you guys come over to my house and we'll just
oh my God, I'm in.
Set it up.
During the day?
You
just
paying?
Throw some alts at us?
It's all going to be on stage interior.
Okay. Perfect. Perfect. We're in.
Oh my God.
Josh, you are amazing. We celebrate you and love you.
100%.
Thanks, guys. Love you too.
Please thank your wife for lending you to us for this.
I will. Good to see you guys.
Bye,
Josh.
Good to see you. Bye, Josh. You've been listening to Welcome to Our Show, a New Girl recap podcast. Welcome to Our Show is a production of iHeartRadio, hosted by Zooey Deschanel, Lamorne Morris, and Hannah Simone. Our executive producer is Joelle Monique. Our engineer and editor is Daniel Goodman. The Welcome to Our Show theme song was written by Zooey Deschanel, performed and produced by Zooey Deschanel and Pierre DeReeder. Follow us on Instagram at Welcome to Our Show Pod. If you have a question you'd like us to answer, you can email us at welcometoourshowpodcast@gmail.com. Don't forget to rate, subscribe, and share far and wide. Thanks for listening. We'll hear you next week.
Coming back to Atlanta. Right now. Whoa. Mark your calendars because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.